Greetings, everyone. This is Ron Stockton. I'm a retired professor of political science from the University. I want to tell you about an amazing and unique project involving Palestinian history. 2 years ago, that would be 2021, my former student, Amin Zrake, contacted me and suggested that I meet Mr. Adel Bisseso. Adel was in possession of scores of deeds and proof of all agreements to property his family owned in pre-state Palestine, the area of what is today Beersheba. He was hoping to figure out a way to make this amazing treasure of data available to the public. The three of us later met several times by Zoom and worked on strategies of finding a major institution materials and make them available to researchers and students and anyone else. It is now 2023, and this project is now operational, and it's quite remarkable. I'm going to be doing three interviews that will help you understand how this project came about and how the digital archive was created at Columbia University and what is in it. The first interview will be with Amin Zrake. We'll talk about his background to meet Mr. Bisseso and be interested in this project. The second interview will be with Adel Bisseso himself. He will tell you about himself and his family and his amazing and heroic grandfather, who lost his land but managed to save these family resources from confiscation or destruction during the 1948 Nakba. This rescue came at some personal cost to him. The third interview will also be with Adel Bisseso, who will tell you about the archival collection and how you can add. Amin, are we ready?
Yes, Professor, we're ready.
Okay, Amin, why don't you tell me about yourself? Where were you born and where did you grow up?
I was born in Detroit, Michigan, and I was born in Hutzel Hospital, Detroit, Michigan, and I grew up in the city of Dearborn, Michigan. Which is a neighboring smaller city to Detroit in the state of Michigan. I grew up in Dearborn pretty much my entire childhood and adolescent years. Eventually, I attended Fortson High School. And then from Fortson High School, I proceeded to my undergraduate studies at the University of Michigan Dearborn campus. So I spent most of my time, pretty much my first 21 years of my life in Dearborn, Michigan.
And then tell me about your law training.
So after I completed my undergraduate studies, I moved to New York City for about 5 to 6 years, where I initially started, I did a master's degree at Columbia University, and then I jumped into a PhD program at NYU. A year and a half into the program at NYU, I no longer saw myself interested in the PhD and academic route, so I decided to quickly transition to law school. From there, I decided to attend Western State College of Law, which is in Southern California in the city of Irvine, and I went to law school in Southern California for 3.5-4 years, and I completed my Juris Doctorate at Western State College of Law.
Okay, very good. What are you doing now?
Currently, I'm an assistant district attorney with the San Francisco District Attorney's Office. So I'm a prosecutor here in the city and county of San Francisco. I've been practicing for about 10 months. I've been a prosecutor for 9 months. Upon completing my legal studies and training, I did a post-bar internship with the San Francisco District Attorney's Office. And then after completing the post-bar, I realized how much I enjoy being a trial attorney. So I decided to start my career as a prosecutor so I could acquire as much trial experience, court experience, and overall harness my capability as a good trial attorney.
Okay, very good. Tell me, which of these trainings is going to be most helpful for you as you approach this project?
I believe just in general, my experience in terms of writing motions, understanding how to make arguments, my trial experience, I believe those type of trainings and the background as a prosecutor will enhance my capability in terms of bringing forth a legal framework to the project. And being able, I foresee this project going into the international law route. So at least having a micro background in prosecution will enable me to use it on a larger scale, hopefully in the coming years, when it hopefully reaches on an international scale in terms of may it be reparations or some sort of recognition, acknowledgement of war crimes and the confiscation of land. I believe that my background in prosecution in itself would be beneficial in terms of bringing forth arguments and framing this into a legal argument in the future.
This is very interesting. You just raised some points that are different from how I would approach this. As an academic, my goal is to get the data out there so researchers can study it. And your goal is much different. You don't see this, you see this as an ongoing project. It doesn't just stop with making it available. When I deposit my research materials into the archive in Ann Arbor, it just is there. If people use it, they can. But you see an ongoing project, don't you?
Yes. And to explain why is because it's an ongoing situation in the Middle East. It hasn't come to an end. And we believe that the project is valuable academically in terms of raising public awareness, bringing forth research and enhancing the research on Palestine. But it also has benefits that would be used in other realms, such as the legal realm, in terms of establishing sovereignty, ownership of land, which is a highly contested debate and narrative among the Arab-Israeli conflict and Palestinian-Israeli conflict. So I believe this project would be beneficial in multiple realms. I do believe, like you said, Professor Stockton, that the first and foremost, most important realm is bringing forth this to public eyes, to researchers, to academians, to having the exposure that these deeds do exist, that Palestine and Palestinians were of ownership of these lands and were of a sovereign people prior to the Nakba in 48. I believe this narrative would enhance reconciliatory dialogue as well as the debate on whether or not Palestinians are entitled to some sort of reparation or if they are indeed owners of those lands, those contested lands.
Very interesting. You were my student, and I had a class on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And as I said, I would love for this project to have been operational at the time, so I could have sent you and my other students off to, with the assignment, to find three or four of these titles and look at where they are today within this now modern city of Beersheba. What happened to that land and where is it and what would it be worth today? That would have been an amazing project, but it would have been a project that would have worked at one level. Now there are other levels. You know, somebody sometime, I hope, is going to turn this into a doctoral research project and write a dissertation, and some established scholar may want to write a book on this. This is very valuable data as I see it. There's nothing quite like this as far as I know available to researchers. So what an amazing, amazing project. I know you're Lebanese, you have a Lebanese heritage.
Yes.
You're not Palestinian. I'm not Palestinian. And yet you're as passionate as a Palestinian on this project. Tell me why you're so passionate about this project.
Professor Stockton, I'm very passionate about this project because when I first met Mr. Pseiso himself, it took us months before we actually discussed the existence of these artifacts, the family documents. Later on in the interview, I'll discuss how I came about meeting Mr. Pseiso, but just strictly on this question, the reason why I became so interested in this project, because when I first saw the documents in person, I've never seen anything like it. It was fascinating. I never thought I'd see stamped, legally endorsed documents of Palestinian-owned deeds. I never came across of anything like that in my life before. And I was so fascinated that Mr. Pseiso had these documents and he was so casual about it. And when he first showed me, I was like, this is amazing. We have to show the world. That was my first impression. We have to show the world. This has to get out there. Because when I first saw the documents, as much as I've been studying Middle Eastern studies and I have a background in political science, I've never had any exposure to artifacts that go back to Palestine, 90, 100 years old, especially artifacts that are to the core essence of the debate of whether or not those land deeds do exist. And when I first came across them, I was like, this is amazing. I was in shock and awe, and I was like, I want to be part of this. Another side as to why I became very interested in this project is the fact that, true, I am of Lebanese heritage, but I tend to think of myself as an Arab American. And Palestine is, it is a section of the overall Arab history of the region. And unfortunately, growing up, I did visit Lebanon many times. So I had the unfortunate experience of experiencing aerial bombardments by neighboring Israeli air forces. I saw the destruction of war. I went to some parts of old Beirut, which preserved the civil war artifacts and the destroyed buildings. And I saw the damage and how important this conflict was, not just to the Palestinian identity, but to the Arab identity as a whole. And we believe that the Palestinian struggle is one compartment of the overall Arab struggle of unification as well as liberation. So I do consider Palestinians, although we are not Lebanese altogether, they are Arabs, and we consider them as our neighbors, our brothers and sisters. And there is an underlying common denominator as an Arab people. So from a professional and just a humanistic perspective, I was excited because I had never seen such old artifacts like this before. And then also coming from a Lebanese Arab background, I felt that this was just something I couldn't pass up. And as an Arab, I felt there was a duty, especially with my background in law and politics, I thought this would be the perfect intersection of opportunity and, studies. And I didn't want to pass it up.
My reaction was very similar, not as an Arab, because I don't have that heritage, but I thought this is an amazing archive of material. There's nothing quite like it that I know of. And so we need to move on this. So you and I have both, you more than I, but we have both put a lot of passion into this project and commitment. Tell me how you met Mr. Pseiso.
This is a very funny story. So I like to go to the gym every day. And when I was in law school, I believe it was around the summer of 2020, which is near the last year of my third 3L year, my last year in law school, I went to LA Fitness in Irvine. I believe it was the Tustin location. And when I was first entering, I typically just go towards the treadmill, start my workout with a good run, maybe 30, 40 minutes. When I was walking towards the treadmills, I saw this older fellow. When I say older, not too old, but he obviously older than me. He was jumping, doing long jumps. And I was impressed. I saw him doing a very far leap for someone who I considered of his age. I was like, oh, wow, you've got jumps. So I went up to him and I told him just blatantly. I told him, like, hey, old man, as a joke. So I'm like, hey, old man, you could jump. And he laughed. He's like, yeah, you could see the other jumps I do too. And then from there, it was a humorous interaction. And then we just shook hands. When I first met him, it was at the gym by pure luck. I was impressed by his jumps and I confronted him, just as a fellow gym member, told him, hey, good job jumping. And from there, we just became friends, gym friends. And it took weeks before I found out of his Arab heritage, his Palestinian background, or any of that. So it just took multiple visits to the gym and interacting with each other until we became very close, where we went out for breakfast, and then Sounds like a love story. You know,
yeah.
I always, it was, he was very, he had much life experience. I was in law school, so I was enduring a lot of stress. So it was good having like an older mentor who would talk to me, remind me, and give me encouraging words to strengthen my spirit to endure my continued studies in law school. So Mr. Pseiso and I became gym friends, eventually became really good friends. And from that point, at one point, he invited me to his house, and then he exposed all these documents, these artifacts, 55 of them. And that's when I was in fascination. I was like, wow.
I remember when you first told me, you said he had the highest vertical jump I've ever seen.
He did. It was definitely better than mine at that time, because I was busy studying. And so when I saw him, I was like, this guy's got a really good vertical jump. I was impressed.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's good. Why did you drag me into this project? Drag in a friendly way.
Well, Professor, the thing is, you know, you were not only my professor in University of Michigan Dearborn, but I grew very fond of your teaching capabilities and ability. And I liked the way you taught students at the university. I took multiple courses with you, particularly, as you mentioned, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict course, which provided an objective narrative of the conflict, the resolutions, the problems, and all the historical and contemporary problems with the evolution of the conflict. And you were also the chair of the Model Arab League, which drew me in at the University of Michigan Dearborn. Now, the Model Arab League was the equivalent to the UN Model League for undergraduate students, where they would take a country, represent that country and its policies, and would go to negotiations and debates, and eventually represent that country to the best of their ability. And University of Michigan Dearborn, under Professor Stockton's reign, so to speak, was always victorious and bringing the most awards for most outstanding delegates. And I took two awards of most outstanding delegate. And then I took the third year, the honorable delegate award. And I believe that Mr. Professor Stockton yourself was very interested in the research, seeing that, you know, you're an academician, you're a professor, you've published many works on not only the Middle Eastern studies in general, but Arab American community. And I believe that you were involved to a certain extent that this project would interest you. So I thought, if I'm going to drag any professor, it's going to be one of my favorite professors, if not my favorite professor, Professor Stockton, who inspired me to, you know, continue researching and working in this field. So that's why I dragged you, Professor Stockton. I thought you would be.
Well, I'm so glad that you did, because as soon as you told me, I was very, very excited. And by the way, you were always a fantastic Model Arab League representative. I think that gives you good training to be a lawyer, because your job is to represent your country. And some years you get Palestine, years you get Iraq. These countries have positions all over the place, and it's your job to represent them. So I think you came out with unique skills that I think were very valuable to you.
Okay, I absolutely agree.
What else do we need to talk about? What would you like to see in 10 years in terms of this project? What would you like to see in 10 years?
This is my favorite question, Professor. The reason why is I don't know where this project would be in 10 years, nor do I have a cement plan. But what I would like to see it is first 2 years after this interview, as well as public exposure and establishing the archive with Columbia University, I would like to see it maybe 5-10 years from now being used as a resource, these documents actually being used as a resource for furthering legal studies, as well as legal action. Maybe one day where there's another peace accord between the Israelis and Palestinians, there would be not only the Pseiso family collection, but maybe this might incentivize all Palestinian families with remaining deeds and documents to come together to establish a collective Palestinian archive. I actually gave this idea to Professor Khalidi of Columbia University, and he thought it was a good idea because, from my understanding, when I spoke to Professor Khalidi, he told me that his family also has an independent established archive for their documents and artifacts. And I asked them, has there ever been a uniform effort between all these dominant families that do have these documents and deeds to come together, maybe establish a collective Palestinian archive of ownership? And he told me he doesn't know of any. So I thought, this is the start. This could be the start. And it's only one domino to the next. So 10 years, I would just like to see this to gather more momentum among all Palestinians and be used as a resource, however it may be, in negotiations, for reparations, whatever discussions. And I think just seeing it expand is where I would like to see it 10 years from now.
This is good. I like these ideas. Okay, you got any more thoughts you want to share? We're about to the end of our time here.
Yes, the last thing I would like to mention is how we came about establishing the archive at Columbia University.
Mm-hmm.
So like I mentioned, when I first came across this project, you were the first professor that I discussed it. And then you suggested I talk to Professor Khalidi, who I did have as a professor when I was attending Columbia for my first master's degree. And I reached out to Professor Khalidi. He thought this was a fascinating collection of deeds, land agreements, et cetera. And he told me he'll put me in contact with the library and the archive librarians who work around establishing archives. It was a long and tenuous process, but after many months, actually a year and a half, we finally established a finding aid archive at Columbia University, the first of its kind, as well as the DLC, which is a digital library collection, will be established at Columbia University. And this took a year of negotiating where I had to use my legal skills negotiating the actual deed to Columbia University. And Mr. Pseiso and I finally came to an agreement. We negotiated a gift deed to Columbia University with terms and conditions where they established an archive that would be disclosed and accessible to their researchers, their professors, all academians and students who would be interested in researching this subject.
That's wonderful. That's exactly, from the time we first started, that's exactly what I was hoping would come about, that some major university would take this under their wing and create an archive and make it available. Because in you don't have to go physically there. You can go to the internet. This is the age of the internet. It's available anywhere in the world for people who want to study, use this as a resource for their research or whatever it may be.
Yes, we believe that this project hopefully is going to enhance the narrative and exposure to Palestinian history, as well as enhancing the debate on the narrative of whether or not these contested lands do go back to the families, and did they relinquish ownership, or do they still have the contested deeds in their possession? And I believe this project hopefully will have a multifaceted impact in the later generations once this archive and many more archives will come about exposing the existence of these deeds.
It would be great to have an archive of archives.
It would. I thought when I suggested this idea to Professor Khalidi, he was actually surprised. He never thought of it himself. So,
I think 50 different families putting their material online and then having a major Palestinian clearinghouse where all of these things would be accessible regardless of where they're located physically.
Absolutely.
This is wonderful. I think this is going to make a major contribution, and I'm glad you're involved in it, and I'm glad you brought me into it, and I'm just glad to be a small part of this project. So thanks so much, and thanks for this very interesting interview.
Thank you, Professor Stockton. I appreciate your time and looking forward to continuing this project with you. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.